Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show. My name is Josh, and I'm here in Orlando talking with entrepreneurs, getting it straight from their mouth of their story, what they're building, some hurdles that they've overcome, some challenges that they're facing, and what they're doing to impact the community here in Orlando. So today I'm excited because I heard a story at a place called 1 Million Cups, and I heard a story and it inspired me, and I really valued their story. I really got lit up by the transparency and their authentic approach to helping people. So on today's show, guys, I want to introduce you to the founders of a company called Wellness, Mr. Ruben and Andrew. Ruben and Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. So ladies and gentlemen, listening into this audio right now, we're having a conversation with two founders. So you're going to hear different voices. You have Ruben, who's a founder, and you have Andrew, who's a founder, and they're going to tell you their story. So why don't I hand over the microphone, and why don't you, one of you, tell us your story and how you started this idea of a company called Wellness.
All right. So I'm Ruben. I'm a little bit of a deeper voice, so you could probably recognize me that way, hopefully at least. So I started the idea for Wellness after dealing with some personal issues, some depression that had been with me since I was about 15 years old is when I first started realizing or feeling something wrong. I didn't really realize what was going on. But I was a freshman in high school, and I was just taking a lot of naps. And my dad is a really big napper, and I didn't think much of it at the time. And it turns out that later on, things came to a boiling point, and my behavior was becoming more erratic and unpredictable, to a point where my family intervened. They felt that... I asked my family for help, and I'm from Hispanic origin, so my family their first response was like, "No, you just have to will your way through it. Like, you can overcome this. Like, it's okay." But after dealing with it for so many years, I'm like, "No, like, I need help from a professional, because if I don't, I know that my huge ambitions for my future, this will just get in the way of that in the future. It will come back and haunt me. I know it. I can feel it." So I got the help. Well, I went to go see a professional. So I went to go see a psychiatrist and a therapist. And in that process, I learned that the best way of trying to understand what's going on, one of the first things they do is they ask you to keep track of your mood. They give me this on what looked like a printed out spreadsheet. And I, at the time, had just started college, studying computer science. And the idea of keeping around this piece of paper with all of my emotions on it and possibly losing it, or actually, you know, submitting it to my professors with my final, was just really, really uncomfortable feeling. So I felt that there could be an app to do this. So I tried a whole bunch of different apps, and none of them lived up to the high standards that I have, which was actually, I found out later, was part of the problem of the depression, being a perfectionist, and never being able to achieve perfection. It's just a recurring and toxic thought that was impeding my successes in life. So I built Wellness in an attempt to bring in the things that affect your mood into one place, along with your ordinary mood journal in one easy to use app that is unintrusive and easy to use.
Wow. Well, Ruben, thank you for sharing a little bit of your story. Before we dive into ask Andrew any questions, do you mind if I ask you a few more questions about
Absolutely.
This? Because I believe this resonates with a lot of entrepreneurs and people, including myself. You know, like the anxieties of life sometimes could kind of put pressure on you. So some of the symptoms you were experiencing, and I'm not a doctor.
Okay? No, go ahead.
But you were constantly in fatigue, constantly taking naps. You felt anxiety. What other things were going through your head as you were looking towards your future and you saying, I have a bright future, but there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
You know, like what other symptoms were you having?
Mostly feeling antisocial, dealing with the anxieties of high school. High school's rough for a lot of people. Just feeling like that I just didn't fit in. Nobody would ever like me for being the nerd that I am. That feeling didn't even after years of therapy, those feelings still are just feelings that are still with me, but I am able to manage them way, way better. Deal with them in a way that doesn't impede on my progression through life. So the social anxieties were definitely a big part of it. But finding, just understanding that the word no is very powerful, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person. If you tell people, no, I'd prefer not to go to that party. Understanding the power of saying no really made a huge, huge, huge difference. I like to say, despite what's going on right now with Kanye West, I find some inspiration in him in that he says no if he disagrees with it, even if it's not popular opinion. So I find those traits of you know, taking control of your life very, very powerful tools, and no is one of those tools that allowed me to deal with those anxieties a lot better. Because if you're looking out for yourself, I mean, other people, a lot of the time they're not even thinking about you, but your social anxieties get to you and you believe that everybody is looking at you and judging you and analyzing every single move of yours. So, yeah. It's tough.
So a professional said, you know, here's how we can help you. We want to track your mood, and so we can track your progress.
Yeah.
If you're happy or sad, what's causing it? What are some of the things? So they give you a piece of paper. So you're carrying around essentially a piece of paper of your deepest, darkest secrets, and right. hopefully you don't lose it, which causes actually
more
anxiety.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. This is good. All right, we're on to something here, guys. All right. So, Andrew, how did you come into contact with this guy Ruben? And what how did this form? How did this start? What's your story?
Yeah. So I graduated high school in 2010, and I promptly got a job. And I was lucky enough to be able to land a job at the Apple Store. And so this is when I met Ruben. Ruben had already been working there. And pretty quickly, we discovered just over lunches and breaks that we both enjoyed a lot of the same things, Apple being the primary one, but design generally. Yeah. And so our friendship sort of blossomed out of there. And for a while, I had been trying different things, consulting and you know, small projects with a friend of mine. And I always would show Ruben what I was working on because I knew he had a tremendous eye for design. And over the years, he would start to show me stuff, and he showed me this excellent idea called Loma. And then the first designs were really inspiring to me. I really loved the idea of just having this tracker for your emotional state, and then being able to track that against what you're taking. I felt like it would be a huge innovation inside of your personal care, you know, knowing what is working for you, what is affecting your mood. And so I think just the inception of the idea was so intoxicating for me, and I wanted to help. And so I started helping by contributing work to the design and refining those initial designs while Ruben was learning how to write iOS apps so that we can actually start building this thing. And it was a natural collaboration. You know, we loved the same things. We had a very, very similar tastes, and he needed the extra bandwidth so he could start building the app. And it gave me an opportunity to sharpen my design skills at the time and kind of really, really think about where we were going to take this thing. And, you know, over time, the idea grew from just moods and medications to including health data. As, you know, the Apple Watch became more prominent in our own lives, we realized, wow, there's so much information that's being generated with something like the Apple Watch and similar trackers, that if we could pull this all together and give somebody a truly comprehensive look, while only requiring minimal interaction from them to say, you know, this is how I'm feeling, that would provide so much tremendous value to them, but maybe also their care providers. So I think I just really have fallen in love with the idea, and Ruben and I are you know, tremendous friends who've gotten along. So it was perfect. It was kind of a match made sort of thing, one in a million.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way.
Awesome. So Andrew, you were working at out of high school. You got a job with Apple and you started, you know, working there, and that's where you met Ruben, but you were doing consulting work. What kind of consulting work were you doing as a side hustle?
So it was, I started out doing like logos and branding, working for my mom's law office. She was just kind of getting off the ground, and it was an opportunity to start with that. I did some landing page design, and from there, working with some of her colleagues and partnering with a good, you know, a long time, a friend of mine who was living on the West Coast, who was, you know, getting some client work for startups. We decided, hey, let's put our two heads together. I'm getting really into this web development thing. And I really like, you know, interaction design. He loved UX design and the branding stuff. So we just said, let's do it. It's a great, you know, college thing. And you know, I've never had a small appetite for projects. And so it was a great way to just keep myself busy, with the coursework. Cause clearly that wasn't enough, along with the job at Apple. But I, you know, I left Apple in 2015 because, I wanted to finish. I wanted to get my degree from UCF. And I needed to take a course that was like 4 days a week in the middle of the day. And so Apple just couldn't have me work around that schedule. So I said, okay, the consulting is actually going really, really well right now. We, you know, we had some assurances for about 3 months of income. So I was like, all right, I'm willing to take this risk. And I did that for a little while, and I got tired of the up and down nature of consulting work. And I got a job as a software engineer at Wyndham. And I think during that time at Wyndham was really when I was starting to, in my free time, pick up more work with wellness, because all of that consulting work had started to die down and get delegated to my partner at the time. So yeah.
Awesome. So you guys were hanging out, having lunches and breaks and talking about wellness, and Ruben's telling you about, you know, some of the issues that he's having in his world and how that there's a gap, like nothing's really fixing it, like helping him using technology. So you guys came together, started sharing these ideas, and how did the first product roll out? Because you guys have a product that's on the Apple Store right this minute.
Yeah.
How did this happen from working at Apple to now Apple is your salesperson?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting story, because I had to quit Apple in order to pursue this dream for two reasons. The first reason is I had tried programming on my own a few times, and I just found that I had too many questions to be satisfied with the quality of the education that I was getting. So these tutorials online were not enough for me to satisfy my curiosity as to how computers work. You know, dealing with the perfectionist tendencies in myself, I just wanted to have the answers to the questions that I had in order to build software. So after multiple attempts over the years, I started my computer science degree at Rollins. And in that time, I figured, that it would be best to focus on that degree. So I left Apple. So one was a time conflict. So just like Andrew. The second, though, is that when you work for Apple, you're not allowed to publish any apps in the App Store due to conflicts of interest. there are they found that there are, you know, legal issues there, so I wasn't able to do that. And to pursue this bigger dream, I had to let go of, well, at the time it was my first and only job, but my favorite job, because I love the company and I love what they stand for. Working for a company that big with such strong conviction on their morals is just, I knew then that it was really rare and that it's not something that a lot of companies have at that size. So had to leave Apple for conflicts of interest and for time. But so studying computer science at school, I learned Java, and iOS doesn't run Java. So I had to teach myself using the programming concepts that I learned in school to learn how to program for iOS. So this took a while. At the time when I started, Swift was just about 6 months old, and it was way too new for me to feel convinced that it is the platform or the language that I should be using to build, you know, my dream. So I built it all in Objective-C, and it took about a year and a half or so, Andrew, I think, to get something that we felt was worthwhile to publish in the App Store. There were a few times where we thought we were ready to publish, but a key insights came in. These have actually both been primarily Andrew has been his really big contributions is we're ready to release, but I think there's something we should add. And actually, now that I think about it, this has happened three times. All three have been Andrew, but good for the better, I promise. So the first one is, the first iteration of the app did not have note-taking in it. It just had mood rating. So you just rate your mood. We wanted more depth and more fidelity in understanding what is influencing your mood. So we're like, stop everything. Like, we need to deliver notes in here. So we built that feature. Second is health, which Andrew has referred to already. Bringing in data from other sources. We wanted to paint that picture of your mood a lot better. And then third was so last minute that it was actually one of our first like tense moments as a test of our partnership was a week before we were going to release. Essentially what it boiled down to is changing the entire business model of how the app would make money. It went from being a paid app to a subscription tier for good reason. But at the time, I didn't see it the way Andrew did. And so we were at a disagreement for about 2 days or so. and honestly, I was just very upset that this drastic, you know, business model change is happening just a week before. So it was just a shock to the system. And so we ended up with the subscription tier, and it has worked out for us, and it has been better. I had a lot of personal gripes with subscriptions that don't provide value to the user, but we have an app that our customers agree that is providing constant value to them. So we're happy we've made those decisions. So that's how the app came to thing. It's been pretty slow. It started in 2014, at the very, very tail end of 2014, and we delivered the app in the App Store in, what was it?
September.
September of 2017?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we've been honing this craft for a long time.
All right. So being a podcast host, I get the pleasure of digging in when I hear something pop up. And I know people are listening in on this show and they heard, oh, a fight, you know, like, all right. So Andrew. Yeah. Take us back to iteration number three. You did iteration number one, added some notes. Iteration two, you added some components of health. Iteration number three, total change of the business model. Now, here's a developer, a perfectionist on the other side, your buddy Ruben and your business partner, and you said, we need to change this. Walk us through the story of what happened there, because partnerships, I think everyone thinks of partnerships as, you know, like a married couple,
right,
or a business partner doing this. So like, talk to us about the relationship there and what happened. This is,
sure,
I feel that there's something here.
Sure. Yeah. So I think, I think it starts to, it's good to start by talking about this sort of a rapport and culture that Ruben and I kind of share. And, you know, we say, you know, brass tacks a whole lot. It's, you know, we're very, very much about being, you know, brutally honest with one another. No bullshit and not taking things personally and remembering that it's not personal. And I fall on the wrong side of that plenty. You know, sometimes I'm having a hard day and I'll take something personally. I used to have a rule with an older co-founder that was, you know, don't give work that you need feedback on in a time frame that's less than half of the amount of time it took you to do it. So if it took you, you know, 4 hours to put it together, wait 2 hours before sharing it. We found that this was a good cooling off period where you're allowed to be more objective about feedback and criticism. If you do it, you know, outside of that cool down, you're going to be a little bit more heated and defensive over your work, I've found. So adhering to this has been helpful. But in this instance, I realized that we were setting ourselves up, I felt, for failure by doing a one-time purchase of the app because we were looking at a sale price of, I think, about, you know, $4. And our plan, our launch plan was to discount that price for a bit of time. And then ramp up the price, but it would have taken a lot of marketing effort to sustain sales on that model. You know, somebody who finds it in the app store is going to have a huge barrier to entry for an app that's not free. And I knew this because of how I buy apps and how people around me buy apps. And I realized that we needed a different model. And so I was trying to, you know, figure out the best way to express to Ruben, the way we've thought about this business is not strategically sound for us at this moment. I had to think really, really thoroughly because when we discuss things, it's very much about being thorough, I think, between the two of us. And whoever wins out an argument ultimately is the one who's been the most thorough and who's, you know, thought through most of the cases. And I've always appreciated that about our relationship because the only time I, you know, ever am on the wrong side of an argument is because I probably didn't think through it for as long and as hard. We generally come to similar conclusions. And if we don't, we're able to take some time to get some value realignment. And a lot of times it's interesting, this happens over, I think, text more often than it happens in person. You know, we communicate largely through Slack and text messages. And so I think we're both really skilled writers. And we're able to skillfully articulate our arguments to one another. And we're also both excellent listeners. And so we're willing to absorb an argument that we may not totally agree with and find a way to agree with it before just like cutting it out entirely. So I think in this specific instance, when I expressed it to Ruben, it was a wall of development time. And then a bunch of thinking time, right? So I was basically giving him a tremendous task by saying, we need to change this business model. And so I knew that was going to be jarring, to say the least. And so I tried to prepare as much as possible in terms of like thinking about how we would have to implement it, what the pricing structure, you know, I thought it would be, and essentially just, you know, piecemeal providing all of the different things that it would take. And I think it ended up adding at like a month of additional development time. And I mean, a ton of back and forth and just getting, you know, the purchase flow right, thinking about things like, you know, when we have to lock down the app and what that looks like, a whole bunch of copy for making sure that it was comfortable to the user and didn't feel like, you know, they were going to get hijacked at any point. And the basic structure is, you know, the app is free to download and you're always able to track your mood. Now we give you a 7-day free trial of the enhanced features of the app, which includes the pill box, so you can track all your medication, set reminders, and you know, see your adherence, as well as your health information. And so those were the paid features, and then those are available on a monthly. We started out at 99 cents a month, $10 a year, and $20 to unlock the app forever, which I think was a big part of winning Ruben over, was having that forever tier, because I remember his biggest I guess argument in opposition was this sort of maintenance fee that is sort of unpopular in software, but it's where a lot of companies are moving towards for a number of reasons. I think the incentives are well aligned, as a small development team, having a customer base who is continuously paying for the app is incentivizing us to work for them. That's a big part of like why customer support has become such a big part of our model, and such a, you know, a primary foothold on the app is because we want people to feel like we are actively engaged and that they're contributing to the development of the project, and building something bigger and helping us build something bigger, more than just like a utility fee. And I think when I was able to pose it like that, Ruben saw the value in what I was talking about and the sort of virtuous cycle that it creates for us and building a customer base and growing that customer base over time.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you dropped some really strong golden nuggets in there about how to deal with conversations with partnerships. So I want to repeat one of these. It's when you create something, let's say it takes you 5 hours to create something, wait half that time before sharing it and asking for feedback. Because when you create something, you're excited, you're running, you know, on emotion and excitement. And then if they don't like it, it's going to be a shot down. So that cool off period, I think, is a great, a great example of very wise. Ruben.
Yeah.
Back to you, brother. When he said we need to change this business model, and he came with all these, this evidence and this, this structure and this argument, in which he probably practiced in the mirror.
And we probably both do to each other.
Yeah. So when he proposed this and you got over the fact that of all the work that I had to do, what was your next step and what happened then?
Well, with this, a big part of this shift is, you know, having customers pay. Basically, we're on a line for the customers now in a way that we weren't before. Before it was a one-time purchase, and now, you know, we're beholden to them every single month. And in a way, I like that because it, like Andrew said, it forces us to be better and serve our customers. I think that the way our economic philosophy is as Americans is that, you know, eventually business, the business's core will shift in a way that is driven by the wherever the money is coming from, wherever the revenue is coming from. So if we make our business rely on great customer service, I think it's better for everybody. So my first things outside of the technical implementation of all of this is how do we make it seem like this isn't a, you know, a bank account maintenance fee, where what the heck does a bank account need maintenance for? You know, nobody really knows, but it costs $12 a month. You know, nobody, it seems arbitrary. And like, I didn't want it to feel like one of those things where it's an extra fee that nobody really knows on your Comcast bill. I wanted the customer to love the app, but also feel like they are supporting the growth of this bigger thing. So the shift to this new business model did take a few days for it to marinate in my brain and become for me to understand the value in it. But I do think that me from a few years before, basically more depressed version of me, would have seen such a wild new idea as a threat to my dream of delivering this app, that I would have been probably too proud to admit that our business model was flawed and it basically resists a change for no real good reason. But over the years, I've learned and matured enough to understand that good ideas can come from anywhere. And the partnership that I have with Andrew is really critical. It's honestly, I feel it's my most valuable asset in wellness, because there's not a lot of work that I have to do for to get Andrew on the same like wavelength as me. Like we're communicating at the same wavelength, and I don't have to get him up to speed or anything. We just are there already. And that's, I'm not sure that's something you can teach or you can work on. It's just a natural like bond that we have that I really just, we're both better for it. So understanding that great ideas can come from anywhere, not just me, was a big humbling experience that this whole project has really taught and instilled in me, that having a good smart partner is what I need to make an even better version of my dream come true.
True. Now you guys rolled this out. You finally had the launch after a few iterations, and you guys launched this. And you guys at one point were featured by Apple.
Yeah. Right?
You guys became the featured app by Apple. Like, what? So for people listening in, explain to the community like the big deal that is.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
What happened when that happened?
Right. So this is cool because, okay. So what it is basically, in the newest app store, the newest iteration of the app store on iOS, on iOS 11, Apple stocked up on a whole editorial team. They improved their editorial team to be more robust, and feature content in a way that felt more personal. So what they do is they present apps in a section called Today. So Today's Recommended Apps, and they show a full, like, I would say 2.5 by 3 inch, so business card kind of size billboard for an app of what they're featuring. And what happens is that they dive into why this app is great at what it does. It's a big deal that we got featured. When we did, we didn't realize it at the time because we were just kind of blown away by being featured just at all, that we were actually featured just 3 weeks after launch. We realized this just like months after the feature, that it had only been 3 weeks before our first feature. We could see on our downloads chart where the spikes are from the massive surge of traffic. That morning I had woken up, and I'm not sure if Andrew was awake yet, but I texted him. It was like, yo, we're seeing a lot of traffic. Like, where is this coming from? We had no idea. We couldn't figure it out for a while. And Andrew, I still wouldn't have figured it out, but Andrew had the intuition to check the App Store to see if we were featured, and we were featured. Forgetting the actual headline for it, but it was among the best mental health apps just 3 weeks after we launched. So we were really, really proud of that. And we were featured two more times, and a couple of times in other app stores around the world, even though our app is only available in English. So we feel like that's just a testament of the simplicity and the great design that is Wellness. So we're really proud of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew, when you received that text and you checked the App Store, and you saw that you were featured, like, and you saw the spike of traffic. So, like, from the perspective of, like, we're testing out an idea, we're putting it into the marketplace. Like, a lot of entrepreneurs, we build stuff, we put it out to the world, and sometimes it's crickets, and we're just waiting for someone to say yes. We're waiting for validation. So you got validated by Apple to say that this is a great app, and then the community responded. What did that look like in terms of, if you could share with me, numbers or any type of stats or anything like that the first time it happened? Now, you've been featured three times total. What happened that first time to your business, to your mindset, to your relationship? Like, what changed?
Yeah, you know, like you mentioned, validation, I think that was, you know, key. It was we needed a win. It was that W that we had been so yearning for. And it's funny because about a week, maybe 2 weeks prior, I was getting, you know, acquainted with the search ads interface to try and run some search ads for Wellness on the App Store. And basically, I misconfigured it, and it rolled through $500 in like 12 hours. And it was supposed to be over a month. So I blew it on that. And that was that was pretty rough. That was, you know, early on. And there was a good insight that came from it, because we, you know, we basically configured it to automatically optimize itself. It was new. I was like, let me see how this is going to run over the course of a month. Happened in a day. But we got the insights that we wanted, you know, a whole month early. And we learned that it was really popular amongst people who were searching for like period trackers and ovulation trackers. And so we, you know, we realized that the app was appealing more to women in a really organic way, the way that the ads had been showing. And we learned quite a bit more about what keywords we needed to be targeting and sort of the verbiage we should be using. So that was a good thing to learn. And the reason that was important to mention is because the same amount of traffic that we got from that, which I don't remember the specific amount, but I want to say it was probably about like 5,000 page views of the actual App Store page itself. And then our conversion rate on that was probably something like 20% because it was ads. When we got the Apple feature, we got the same number of page views, but conversion went up to something like 60% because we were in a list of other apps specifically for mental health. So that, just to give you an idea of what the spike was. So we basically got a free $500 of audience that was way more qualified, and way more interested in actually downloading the project. So it was a really, really big moment for us. And it taught us a lot about our strategy with regards to marketing, especially paid marketing. We realized that, you know, it probably is just better to keep focusing on the app quality, because that would in turn lead to A, better reviews, which, you know, improves search rankings. So that's going to improve downloads, which in turn improves search rankings and gets more visibility to Apple. Apple, at the end of the day, has the App Store to sell iPhones and iPads and their products. So our job as developers is to help make those products the best products for their customers, which means that, you know, wellness has to be the best that it can be on iPhone. And so we've been focusing on doing that. And I think that's why, you know, they've continued to feature us in other app stores. But yeah, it was a really, really tremendous experience and much, much needed win. It's important to recognize those too. I think as a team, we do a really good job of kind of taking a moment and letting the win happen. Yeah. You know, we had the presentation at 1 million cups and I think we just took the rest of the day off. Like we were probably going to work. We were like, you know what, you know, we had a really good turnout and, you know, it was really, really good feedback. We owe this win. Let's have it. Let's enjoy it. Let's celebrate. And that, you know, I would just say to the audience, do that, you know, I guess be grateful for those moments because they can be sparse. It's a tough journey. And so you really want to relish them and use that as fuel for the next one.
Yeah, that really helps with keeping the perfectionism in check too, because you just want to keep beating yourself up over, you know, it wasn't perfect, but Andrew has been a really big part of instilling that culture in this mini company that we have to celebrate our wins. And, you know, there are times that like a feature isn't working out as it should, like it's full of bugs and I sent him a new version of the app and it's still not working correctly. And I just want to, you know, rage quit at that moment. And Andrew's like, you know what? Like it's really great. You know, it's not perfect, but you know, we should still, he reminds me to remember the good things in what we have going for us. We've had plenty of successes. Even though sometimes, you know, all you can remember are what appear to be failures. So I am thankful to have a partner like Andrew to remind me of those things.
That's cool. So you guys have this app in the store. It's wellness. So people go on App Store, and we'll put the link in the show notes. Cool. But on their iPhone, they could go in. And they could download this app. They could track their mood. They could track their pills. They could track their health and fitness or their health and wellness. Right. And they can kind of keep track of their progression through life. So you guys put this in the marketplace, had three features, had some spikes, threw some money and wasted some money in TPC, but learned from it. But when you guys we were talking about partnerships, you said one of the things that really works well and that we're really good at is listening. So the reviews started coming in, and people started emailing you, asking you questions. Talk to me about listening to the customer, because it sounded like you had to change a little bit towards providing service to a female, which none of us here are, right? So talk to us about the listening process from reviews, from emails, from the research that you guys did. What did that look like?
So I'm gonna let Ruben take this one primarily, because early on when we first set up the app for support, Ruben was primarily getting the emails. And that was like the start of our journey to improving customer support. So I think in terms of early days, analyzing customer support, Ruben's gonna be the better one to take this question.
So we first started out doing email support inside of the app, and I had never felt that was adequate, mostly because my programming skills weren't as great as. I mean, as good as they are today, so I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do to effectively troubleshoot an issue with a customer. But the things that we learned from our audience, that a lot of them are females, it's actually a ratio of about 75% females to males. And that the biggest learn from, or the biggest influence that it's had on the app, is the menstrual cycle feature. That has been informed by the women around us. As men, we could design it, any way we want. But if a girl disagrees, then what's the point of the whole feature? So Andrew has asked his wife about the feature, about the design of the icon. What does this icon look good? We're both designers and engineers. We're really interesting hybrids in that way, where we have design roots that have become engineers. But there have been iterations of the icon that were unpleasant to look at to a female. To me, it looked good, but to a girl, they said it looked like a weird vagina, and it was a heart with a little
bit of a drop.
A drop of blood in between it, but it looked like female anatomy to them. So they would know, they would know better than I, so I took their word for it. So we changed the icon to something a little more abstract. But listening to the users has always been really important to us. Otherwise, I mean, you won't have customers if you don't listen to your customers, especially when you're this small, when you don't have an established reputation. You need to establish the rapport with the customer. And so by email, email's kind of asynchronous in the way where you send a message and maybe a few hours later you get a response. There's no set expectation as to when the response will come in. Hopefully the company will get back to you in a few days. But we wanted to keep improving on that so that we can establish relationships with our customers and be able to ask for feedback in a more approachable way that isn't, here, write me an email. Now I need your email address and I need your name too. We've built in mechanisms in the app that allow to send basically what amounts to a suggestion box. So they can type in just an anonymous comment. Hey, I think this part of the app can be better. And a lot of those features are the ones that we've built, that we've prioritized over others to deliver an app that people want. Because if they don't see the features they want, then we're not going to have a business and we're not going to be able to keep working on this dream of ours. So today we have a chat version of this. We've got really great feedback on it, where our users expect it to be a bot. And then they realize that the behavior from the bot, the language that's being used, is a little too realistic, and they realize that it's actually not a bot, that it's actually a human being on the other side. And when I tell them that it's actually the person that makes the app, they're blown away. They absolutely love that they actually got a hold of the engineer that is actually, programming it. And what's really cool about this is that usually I can stop what I'm doing for a second and see what the bug actually is and troubleshoot it with them live and actually release a new version of the app that is set for approval by Apple and gets approved within a day or two. So the turnaround time is just so much more quick that the customers really appreciate it, and that starts building the loyalty with the customer and establishes that brand recognition. These guys really care about not only the product, but they care about me. And that's really what we're after. We wanted to design a brand that is friendly and approachable, that, you know, is just interested in you and not so blatantly about collecting data or anything like that. We actually don't collect any data to do any of the stuff that we do. So
that's cool. So where do you guys see where you guys are at now, and where is this, you know, going? Where would you guys like to help accomplish in people's lives?
Yeah, we've got a lot of big plans, but you know, I'll go short term and then long term. So short term, a lot of the feedback that our customers have been giving us is, you know, they want to do more with this data. They want to draw more insights from the data, and this has been something that has been on our mind for a long time. Since even version one of the app came out, we've had, you know, drafts of the app where there were different kinds of insights outside of the mood chart. For like individual medications, you'll have an adherence bar, which just kind of gives you the proportions of your adherence. But, you know, we really want to show people that adherence moving over time alongside your mood, and more ways to kind of enter into the app how you're feeling. A lot of users really enjoy tagging. And that's something that had been a great debate for a while, but I think in time we'll be adding to the app. So I think short term, we want to provide more value to the user by giving them insights on a regular basis and sort of employing more of the mechanisms that are used in other apps that do a really good job of getting your attention, like Facebook or Instagram, to draw users in to create habits that are better for them. So if we see, for instance, that you know, you went on a 10-minute run, well, we'll give you a reward, you know, an achievement. You earned a badge that says, you know, I did 10 minutes. And then maybe those badges progress over time to sort of encourage you to keep beating your record or to keep progressing forward. This is something that the Apple Watch does incredibly well. It's sort of a coach in a sense. And if we're able to do this to get somebody to start meditating or to start providing themselves with a morning walk, these things can help improve their mood over time. And we would be able to add sections of the app where they can see this and sort of self-experiment to a degree. So that's where we're heading in the sort of short term with wellness. Longer term, you know, we're working on a product called Wellness Pro that we're really, really excited for. That's so that your care provider can pull in your wellness information as a part of your care plan, and as a part of your, you know, regular checkup. But also maybe change the frequency of those checkups because it's sort of totally remote. They're able to monitor certain things at a distance and check in on you when they know that you may be falling into a moment of crisis. And so crisis prevention is a big part of what we want to be able to provide to care providers, especially in the mental health space. It's really interesting. I think getting into the professional healthcare space is more high touch at the moment. But I think this kind of goes back to our plan with, you know, having a really loyal customer base. Is we think if, you know, we can get enough people using wellness and contributing to wellness in a meaningful way that's improving their own lives, it gives them that self-care aspect. And we tell them, you know, you can actually correspond with your doctor through here, or maybe with a different doctor through here. And we've actually started to see a little bit of interest through this, through the support, you know, haphazardly. Some of the individuals wonder if it's actually like an emotional support or a medical support line. And we've had to clarify that it's for customer support. But we're learning that people are really, really comfortable, luckily, because I guess the design shows that it's trustworthy. But they're really comfortable with communicating about these emotional details of their life with a professional. And we think this is a huge opportunity for improving mental health care for yourself and for providers, you know. So that's kind of where we're trying to take this.
That's good. So guys, you guys here in Orlando, and you know, you're pitching at entrepreneurial events, and you're involved in the entrepreneur community. For those who are listening in, where can people find out more about you as people, and also you as, you know, as a company? Where can people go to find you?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about wellness, you can go to getwellness.co. And wellness is spelled like you would expect it, W-E-L-L-N-E-S-S. And then I have a personal website and a Twitter. You can go to andrewnader.com. I don't know, Ruben, do you have any you want to add to the list?
Yeah, for me personally, it's at Rubenator on Twitter. On Instagram, it's at Ruben. Just that, R-U-B-E-N. And that's where you can find my personal stuff. But yeah, our website is something that we've crafted over some time, and we're continuing to improve upon as our products expand. We have a lot of other stuff that will grow into the wellness family. A lot of great ideas. And here in Orlando, we're at 1 Million Cups in Winter Park at Rollins every now and then. But feel free to send us an email. Our emails are on the website. You can send us a message there, and we'll be able to hook up with you that way.
We've got a messenger on the site. We use Intercom, which has, you know, been fantastic and providing like instant messaging from the website and from inside the app, like we discussed. So if you go to the website and you want to drop us a line, in the bottom right corner, there's a little smiley message icon, and in there you can shoot us a line, and we'll be sure to respond very quickly.
Man, that's great. So ladies and gentlemen listening in, this has been a really insightful conversation with Andrew and Ruben about partnerships, about really listening to each other as partners, but also listening to your audience and your customers and responding accordingly. So I hope you guys valued this. And if you guys want more information about their company, you could go to the website. You could go to the show notes as you're listening in or on this article, wherever you are. You could click on that, and it'll take you right there. And they are encouraging you to have the conversation with them. Download the app. Try the app out. You get a free trial with it. But give them feedback and you know, let them know what you're going through and what the app could do for them. And man, I just – guys, I value you, and I appreciate you guys coming on the show, sharing your journey, and it's been a blast, man. Thank you both.
Thank you very much,
Joshua.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen listening in, go take a look at getwellness.co. Take a look at their app, download it, try it out, track your mood, you know, let them know how it's impacting your world and how it's making your life better. So thank you for listening into the show today. I hope you guys have a wonderful day, and we'll talk with you on the next episode. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.